Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Denise Gagne. I am here today to take over the Better Know a Lawyer podcast.
What?
Exactly. I'm here to take over. And I do that, however, loyal listeners, with the sole intent and the sole purpose of allowing Mr. Weil's loyal listeners the opportunity, the rare opportunity, to get to know him a little bit better. You may have noticed from his podcast that he's very intellectual, that he is somewhat stoic, and that he loves to talk about the law. I share an office space with him, and I would like to give his listeners an opportunity to get to know him a little bit better. So I have created the content of this podcast. Mr. Weil has not seen any of the questions, and I'm a little bit afraid that I'm going to be evicted from our shared working space shortly. But I feel like I owe it to you, his listeners, to give you this opportunity. Mr. Weil, is there anything you'd like to say?
You keep saying listeners like plural. I don't know if you've seen my stats.
Hi, Brianna.
It's a minimal group. It's a very elite group.
Yes. Well, I'm going to give the listeners, but not Noah. Noah, cover your ears right now. Yes, cover them. Just a quick preview to let you know how this format will look. I'm going to do a best and worst section, a would you rather section, and some interview questions, because maybe there are some potential listeners out there who are wondering, should I choose Mr. Weil as my attorney? So we can start with the best and worst section. I'll tap Noah on the shoulder. We're going to begin this podcast, Noah, with some questions under the heading best and worst. So for each question, I want you to tell me the best part and the worst part. Any concerns before we begin?
Hit me.
All right. The best and worst part of never being wrong, Noah. Tell the listeners what that's like.
The best part of never being wrong is just knowing that whatever you say is correct. Like, that you've added truth to the world. Like, the world is a more true and accurate place because you shared your knowledge. The worst part is, like our friend Cassandra, sometimes people don't believe you when you let them know what's going to happen. You can say, if you miss court, it's not going to go well. And your clients may say, I'm going to take my chances. It doesn't go well. And it's frustrating to know the answers, but not always get them to believe the answers.
I understand. I think Cassandra is code for a client that I just got off the phone with. Is that correct, Noah?
Well, it's not. It's a pretty old story. But it is true that we often live in these times that stories imitate life.
All right, Noah. I want to hear about the best part of King County Jail and the worst part of King County Jail. But let's begin, before you answer that, can you tell your loyal listeners just a ballpark best guess estimate of how many times you personally have walked through those doors of King County Jail, whether professionally or personally?
In the front door or the back door?
Yes.
I have probably walked through the doors of King County Jail, all the doors collectively, hundreds of times. I don't know how many times. A lot. We'll say a few hundred.
Is it the place, the type of place that you would hope to send your children one day, or is it the type, the place that you would never wish upon your worst enemy?
It certainly serves a purpose. You know, I think the fact that jails exist is not a bad thing intrinsically, and I wouldn't mind my kids watching me work on the right side of the walls. but it's not a happy place.
All right, that leads us to the best and worst.
The best part about King County Jail. Well, I'll tell you a secret. I really like going there on Sundays because parking in downtown is a pain on every day of a Sunday.
Oh, yes.
There's actually a 3-minute strip that's unenforced on Sundays literally across the street from the place that I like parking, so I can just hop out and go there. And if you show up for clients on Sundays, the guards are impressed and the clients are impressed. And it's usually pretty efficient because there's not a whole lot of extra people there taking up time. So, you know, if my daughter's napping or whatever, I've got free time, I'll go down there and do my meetings. And it's pretty cordial and professional all around. Like, it seems like the right way for it to be run.
Seems like probably a different staff than they have probably during the week when I generally go. Is that what you're
saying? Maybe. I guess the worst part is going with you, because all the accolades and respect that I have, they can't maintain that when you're around. You just kind of suck the room down. You just lower the status for everybody. So that part's not cool. This doesn't happen as often to me as it does to you, but I was asked to take off my shoes one or two times ago, and I thought, Denise wouldn't like that, and I don't really like it either. And I was surprised, because I have this, you know, stature that people are like, oh, you're fine, sir. Thank you for gracing us with your presence. And it was weird to not have that in that case. I guess the guy was new or something.
I don't know if I mentioned this on one of my previous times on the podcast, but one time that I was asked to take off my shoes while going through the metal detector, I was so righteously indignant that I ended up cursing, not profusely, but it was not just once at the jail guards. So that be what Noah is referencing, but I'm dying to know, are you serious?
It's not profusely, it's like intermittently.
Okay, intermittently. Are you serious that you yourself were asked to take off your shoes?
I was, yeah. It's the metal in the heels.
It's disgusting. I don't know why they would ask anybody to take off their shoes and walk through those filthy floors.
Let me tell you this. I've been to that jail hundreds of times, mostly in the front. I've never seen them mop the floors there when I've been there. Just never has occurred in my presence. I'm not saying they don't do it. I'm just saying I've never seen it.
How many times have you contracted MRSA or the flu or some other communicable
disease? I'm contracting
it
right now. It's on all my garments.
Okay, so best and worst. Best part is Sunday, it seems like, but that's more about the day of the week than it is about the jail. But I'll let that answer stand.
I'll actually tell you this. I've been to jails in other counties, and King County is not too bad for access to the clients. They don't make you jump through a lot of hoops. They don't make you call ahead unless you're doing a face-to-face. I think it's the Snohomish County Jail. I got a lot of trouble one time trying to meet a guy. They were unhappy that I just showed up. King County, you can show there. If you're a lawyer, you can go there at 2 in the morning, and they will put you in contact with your client. And I appreciate that 24-hour access, if necessary.
That is a positive thing to say about King County Jail. I, in my lifetime, have never been able to achieve that goal. So thank you, Noah. I will aspire to say something nice in the future when I'm asked about King County Jail. Okay, I want to hear about the best and worst part of being a solo practitioner.
The best part about being in private defense is having more time to work on cases with clients, really being able to dig deep and explore different things that you just don't have the resources or the time to do when you're a public defender. I think for a solo, it kind of lays into that, where I really appreciate being able to choose my own schedule. Like, I can go on Sundays or I can go late at night. I don't punch in or punch out. If my kid is sick, I can take the day without calling my boss and asking for permission or whatever. These are nice things. Yes. I like all that. The flexibility to do the job in the way I think is best for the job and for the family, I really appreciate. The worst part is, and this is why I allowed you to hang with me, is that sometimes you want to, you know, touch base with people or brainstorm with people, and you don't have those resources. Like in the public defenders, every week we'd get together and talk about our cases, talk about cases that had come out from the Supreme Court, strategies and all that stuff. And I enjoyed that. It was a camaraderie and it was illuminating. People had great ideas a lot. And I miss those consistent opportunities to do that. So that is why I like to have meetings with you or have meetings with other lawyers to still get other people's perspectives on cases, because I think it's very valuable.
Yeah, and it can get lonely. It can get a little lonely, and I think both of us are driving around to court quite a bit, and the podcasts that I listen to can only make me feel so loved, you know? That back and forth with another human is important, and it can get lost a little bit in the life of a solo. But I'm glad that we're sharing an office, Noah. You're a fun little guy to sit across from and listen to all of your disgusting man habits, like clearing your throat and snuffing your nose. And
yeah, I mean, I blame the daycare, man. They are just a petri dish of disease that I just pick up and take with me everywhere. Between the MRSA and the strep and the flu.
It's no wonder you're such a
and the
big
diarrhea.
Bone gross. You're so gross.
It's just
no,
every
so
end
gross.
Has just got issues.
God.
Excessive earwax. I mean, there's really nowhere that's not something's happening. Something's churning like a witch's cauldron.
Okay, well, speaking of communicable disease, well, not communicable, but just speaking of, you know, diseases and such, this is a good segue into my next question. What is the best and worst part about being a cancer scare survivor?
Okay.
By the way, he's going to edit out this part.
I'll be happy to share. I was at the doctor's, and they said there was a bump on my shoulder that they didn't like, and they suggested I get a biopsy on it. And they said if it's cancer, it's basal cell cancer, which is the least dangerous cancer you can have, and that sometimes it's so minimal you can use an ointment on top of it to cure your cancer. They have cancer-curing ointments, just a topical cream you put on there. But they said, we'll check it out, and we'll let you know in a week. And less than a week later, they called and said, it wasn't even cancer. You're all good, and we cut it out. So I've got a little hole in my shoulder where this area of skin was that I put a Band-Aid on sometimes. I put one on this morning, and it feels great to be living life cancer-free.
Loyal listeners.
From almost completely healthy to completely healthy, aside from all the flus and, you know, fluids I endure. But no cancer as far as I know.
Loyal listeners, Noah described it as a small hole in his shoulder. He did show me because he was very proud of his battle
wounds. You were begging to see it.
And it is a fucking huge crater on his shoulder that was disgusting.
It's like
where they took out whatever. If it's not cancer, it was some terrible mass that was.
It was spider eggs. I told you. It was just a bunch of spider eggs in there.
So terrible.
It's like the size of a nickel.
But it was good news, and I teased, but we were all very happy that Noah is only a cancer scare survivor.
I had a biopsy 5 years ago in a different part of my body, and that was cancer-free too. Hooray.
All right. Okay. We're going to jump now from best and worst to a new segment that I call Would You Rather? Okay? So you're going to have to pay attention, Noah, because some of these questions are multi-part.
Okay.
Are you ready for the test?
Yeah, hit me.
All right.
I love it.
Assume a scenario where
there's nowhere to go but up here.
Where you're conducting a trial with another attorney. Okay. Co-counsel situation.
Yeah.
Trial. Does this make sense so far? The tasks will be divided, so you each do half the trial. You, Mr. Weil, have your choice to either do opening or closing. Which would you rather and why?
Opening and closing are not equal in a trial. Opening is important. Closing is crucial. You can win a trial if you don't do an opening. You can't win a trial if you don't do a closing. So me and my ego says, give me the most important jobs. I will take those on. I will be responsible for the successes and the failures of the team. So I would rather do closing, but understanding it's a tremendous responsibility. But I do enjoy the creative process of crafting those and the process of delivering them to a jury. Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, I knew that was going to be Noah's answer. I absolutely knew. And I knew the reasons why.
What would you rather do?
It was code for I like to be in control. And as the closer, you are making the final word to the jury, and you're controlling essentially at that point their final perceptions. You're not controlling, but you're guiding them, attempting to guide them strongly to view the evidence in the way that you want to see it. And I would agree with Noah's assessment that closing is much more important, and I think it's more fun too. You get a bit more leeway than you do with opening statements are supposed to be statements, and it's supposed to be dry stuff like, ladies and gentlemen, the evidence will show blah blah blah. But in closing, you get to actually argue and finesse. So
mm-hmm. Analogies, metaphors, you mm-hmm. can play songs and videos. Mm-hmm. Now you remember in the last trial you did, I wrote your closing word for word that you delivered. And how did that trial go, Denise?
Victory!
Not guilty.
Victory!
Yeah.
Victory! Noah's not lying there. Well, he's lying about the word for word, but he did give me the theme to lead with, which I really liked, and the first words out of my mouth were the words Noah had suggested they be. So things ended well, and I think after a two-day trial with Noah showing up right before closing, I can probably only give my victory to him.
I accept it, Noah, graciously.
Yes.
I think writing the closing is more interesting than delivering it. Like, I'm not a thespian. I'm not a stage man. My problem with delivery is that I get so in my head, I forget to, like, use tone correctly or, you know, space things out. It's something I've gotten a lot better on it, but the act of creating the story, I mean, you know, I'm a writer. You've seen my blog.
I have.
I really enjoy that process about tying themes together and tying a story together and writing out a good progression. But the delivery is a whole other skill set, which I'm competent in, but it's fun to also improve and look where I was before. So I look for opportunities to do those.
There is no room for improvement when you are never wrong, correct?
I'll have to think about that.
Okay. Well, let me, while you're thinking about that, can I move on to the next? Would you rather?
Okay.
During negotiations, would you rather have a friendly prosecutor or a smart prosecutor? Negotiations.
I would rather have a friendly prosecutor for two reasons. One, if they're dumb, I can just lie about the law or something and they'll just say, like, I don't know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But more accurately, a lot of our cases have an emotional component. The life history of our clients or the unique circumstances of a case, not all, but a lot. And being able to talk to somebody about the human element, I feel is important. Mm-hmm. It's not something I teach in law school, but I found it to be really effective when trying to make a connection with the prosecutor. So if I have a prosecutor who has a heart, I'm halfway there as far as what I'm trying to accomplish, trying to make that connection.
All right, same question for trial. During trial, would you rather have a friendly prosecutor or a smart prosecutor as your adversary?
I would still rather have a friendly prosecutor for the same reasons. Even though they might make a better connection with the jury because of their friendliness, I think that it's effective. I don't want a jury distracted by lawyers arguing hyper-technicalities or squabbling about legal issues. It happens. It's part of the case. But if I can convince a jury that I'm not the bad guy, that we have valid reasons that we are arguing positions, you know, it's not like good versus evil kind of thing. I mean, if it's going to be good versus evil, I want to be on the good side. But sometimes it's just they have a legitimate belief about why my person's guilty and I have a legitimate belief about why he's not guilty and let the jury sort it out. And if you give the jury the respect that they can make those decisions, they don't need a hyper-technical legal degree to understand them, I think it goes better for you. I think the system prefers it too.
I would agree.
I've had trials where I've had severe conflicts with the prosecutors and trials where it was pretty amiable. And I don't know if the results are different between the two, but I know what I preferred, I know what the clients preferred, and I know, and the ones I've lost, they've gone better in sentencing too.
I'm going to interject here just for a second. You know, this is all about Noah, but having shared an office with me, Noah knows I will never let anything be just about him.
I will edit this portion out, but yes, feel free to say whatever you'd like.
I'm not going to say when, but I will say that one of my trials within the last 12 months had a prosecutor who was neither friendly nor smart, and that was the most frustrating trial that I've had of my defense career. So I agree that if you're given a choice, generally friendly is more palatable both for the jury and for the client and for the attorney.
But I will emphasize that you are both nice and just a sweet person, and you won that trial. That other trial with the not nice, not smart prosecutor. So, you know, if that's the hand you're dealt, I think you made the most of it.
I tried. Okay, we're going to move on from prosecutor questions to jury veneer questions. So a jury veneer is a pool of people that come into the courtroom at the beginning of a trial, and it's the pool of people that the prosecutor and defense attorney will ultimately select their final either 6 or 12 jurors from. And for the types of cases Noah and I usually work on, it's usually a veneer of about 20, give or take, people to select 6 members of the jury. So, for jury veneer, Noah.
I've heard veneer.
Veneer.
I don't
Excuse
know.
Me.
I've heard both. I was wondering if you knew if one was right.
Well, I know that you're never wrong, so I will start correcting myself here on out.
I am never wrong. I've heard both.
Okay. Jury veneer. Would you rather have a jury full of CPS workers?
No.
Or
the other one.
Prosecutors.
Oh, God.
Just a sea full of people who all work in different jurisdictions. They're all either prosecutors or they're all either CPS workers, and that means that they have the same biases and intellectual capabilities as most of the workers that we've come across.
I would go down the Greyhound station, buy my Kalina ticket, and say, you got to go now. You got to get out of town. I will stall, but you've got to go.
Right. I will pay your bail, just GTFO.
I had a veneer one time where there are so many challenges, both peremptory and for cause challenges. Like, there's so much bias that we detected and the court detected that we quashed the whole thing. There wasn't enough jurors left over to actually sit a jury.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often, and the judge was not happy about it, but it was totally valid.
Which jurisdiction was this in?
Seattle Municipal Court.
Wow, that's incredible, actually.
Yeah, so they brought another one with more people than the last one, just so we wouldn't do it again. It's extremely rare that you would have a group of people of what you described.
Collectively so freaking biased.
I mean, I guess if it's a kid thing, I'd rather have prosecutors, and I guess if it's not a kid thing, I'll take CPS workers, but you're sunk.
Yeah.
It's a bad spot to be in.
Okay. Would you rather have a jury full of engineers or a jury full of people who were convicted of crimes themselves?
Crimes. Yeah.
Why so?
I think traditionally engineers, and we're talking about maybe software engineers versus mechanical engineers, a core of engineers is a little bit different, but can tend a little more conservative anyway, versus people convicted of crimes, guilty or not, they are intimate with the process, and they know the flaws in the process. I've said many times, I've never seen a perfect case. Even if a person's guilty, the cops or the prosecutors or somebody screwed up somewhere. And then it's a question of whether those mistakes override a person's guilt, right? Besides mm-hmm. the fact that sometimes innocent people are convicted. So anybody who doesn't have their blinders on and just has a more nuanced view of the process, understands the human beings involved, you know, doing the right thing generally, but not perfect, versus TV where everyone's, you know, perfect, of course. I would much rather have. That's always what I want in a jury. I just want nuance. I want somebody to understand there's conflicting stories, there's perspectives. It's not black and white. It's not good versus evil.
I agree.
I did go for engineers one time on this super technical case about violating a no-contact order, and there were some typos in the order's name. And so I wanted engineers because I wanted people who understood the importance of getting every letter correct.
Yes.
It didn't work. I lost pretty quickly. But the other side won engineers too because they know that generally they skew conservative too.
Yeah.
And so it was a very, very quick jury selection. It's a quick deliberation too.
It's an interesting thing to be in a King County, doing trials in King County because there are so many engineers of multiple types, software engineers, mechanical engineers, between Amazon, Microsoft, Boeing, and I think that it can cut both ways. I've heard criticisms and praises for engineers, criticisms being exactly what Noah just said, that they tend to be a bit more conservative. The praises being it can be helpful to have a engineer on your panel where you are relying heavily on an argument about the burden of proof and proof beyond a reasonable doubt, because sort of the stereotype is generally engineers will expect all pieces of the puzzle to fit mm-hmm. very nicely together so that when they look at the puzzle, they can clearly see that it spells guilt. Very few cases have all of the evidence lined up that perfectly. Like Noah said, very few cases are sort of like you would expect on TV where things line up. So if there are some holes, if there are some missing pieces of evidence or some credibility issues, it can be helpful sometimes to have an engineer there.
I like skeptics.
Mm-hmm.
So skeptical. I'll tell you this. What I've done with my cases is imagine the perfect jury imagine who I want and why, and that helps me align with my theme mm-hmm. also, and then kind of go from there, see who I get, see how close I can get. But it's jury selection is incredibly complex. We could have
yes.
we have a lot of episodes about that. It's a very interesting process. I love it. I think it's some of the most pure lawyering you can do, but it's a big topic.
Yeah, and you have no control over the people who are walking in as your potential jurors. You can prepare the heck out of a case and then be surprised by a veneer full of prosecutors and CPS workers and wonder, how the heck am I going to convince these people that...
No. A fun trick when you have one prosecutor on your panel who really wants to be on the jury and thinks you're just asleep at the wheel is to ask them a bunch of questions about burdens of proof and things, because they'll give you the right answer, you know? Whether they follow it or not. But you can use them to educate the whole rest of the jury from this professional who does it. Like, oh yeah, burden of proof, very important.
Right.
Very
safe. Very high.
Yeah, very high.
Reasonable doubt is the highest burden.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously cut them instantly, but at least the rest of the jury knows what they should be looking for.
All right, Noah, I'm bored of this engineer's talk. I'm married to an engineer. I want to move on to something more exciting. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so we went through negotiations. We went through veneer.
Maybe.
We went through...
Maybe it's veneer. I don't know. We should look that
opening, closing discussions there. I want to talk now a question about when you have a witness on the stand, right? It's your opportunity to cross-examine them. They are a prosecution witness.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather cross-examine a hostile witness or a docile witness?
I guess I'll answer your question, which is hostile, but it's a close one, because kind of the truth of cross-examination is it doesn't really matter who they are. You're using them to tell your own story. So if it's a really good cross-examination, then you don't care about their answers. You just ask a question, they say whatever, then you go to the next question. And if they admit it, that's great. If they don't admit it and you can establish it's not accurate, that they're lying, that's great too. So the advantage of the hostile witness is that it tells the jury this person's irrational.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it means they exaggerate about the claims, or maybe they feel like they need to bolster their case because it's weak, or some reason why the jury shouldn't do what the jury does. And the jury doesn't like that. They can see right through that. If you can, you know, I've had witnesses where I've asked a question and they've gone off on these crazy hostile tangents, you know, what is your date of birth? Oh, your client is the worst sack of shit I've ever seen
right.
in my life. She beat me up and then, you know, left me for dead, whatever. And I said, oh, okay, what's your date of birth? And they're like, oh my God, I'm still in pain. To this day, I'm still in pain because your client is crazy, you know. And I don't react. I just ask the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really crystal clear to everybody, except maybe the witness on the stand, who's the irrational one there.
Yes.
And if again, if you can show them as being emotional, hostile, you know.
Biased.
Yeah, biased. Emotions are one thing, but if their emotions cloud them from letting the system do its thing, you're halfway there, and that's great. So it doesn't really matter as long as you don't yourself get off track, as long as you keep to your plan and maintain your equanimity.
Okay.
But I think hostile gives you more opportunities to do
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I agree. Hostile can be fun. And jurors do not like, they just don't like people who are nasty. And
no.
If you can sometimes even poke the bear and turn a regular witness into a hostile witness, that can... definitely be to your advantage, especially if it's a prosecution witness. Okay, so I'm going to ask, so the next question has to do with DUIs, and I'll tell the listeners that just before this podcast began, Noah and I came fresh off the heels of a DOL hearing, where the hearing ended like it always does for defense attorneys, where us, the two of us, feeling utterly and completely defeated, knowing that we just ran a short race where we will certainly receive a negative result from the hearing examiner / prosecutor in the mail a few short weeks from now.
So just to catch everybody up, because not everybody knows about Department of Licensing hearings,
mm-hmm.
in this state, when somebody is arrested for DUI, a separate action aside from the criminal case is generated from the Department of Licensing, where your license is automatically suspended. Even if the criminal case is dismissed, Your license still goes through this administrative suspension process unless you request a hearing, which costs $375.
Cheap.
Yeah, and then you convince the hearing officer that there is some reason why, legally speaking, the license shouldn't be suspended. And the win rate for these is about 19% in the state, and they are what I call star chambers or kangaroo courts. Mm-hmm. I think they're the least due process ridden process in the state. There have been lots of complaints, lots of appeals, but the Department of Licensing makes money when licenses are suspended, doesn't make money when licenses aren't suspended. Theoretically, I think they believe they're keeping dangerous drivers off the roads. The law certainly allows them to suspend licenses, and they gleefully do so.
So for this question, I will provide a little bit of context also for the listeners that for those who regularly practice DUIs, we have a term kind of called a low blow, and that means a breath test reading that falls close to the per se 0.08 standard. That's a low blow. There's another type of case called a refusal. Some people, when they are asked by law enforcement whether or not they want to submit to a breath test, say heck to the no, and then notice goes to the Department of Licensing, telling the Department of Licensing that this person refused to submit to a evidentiary sampling of their breath. And a report also goes to the prosecutor's office. And then the prosecutor's office has to make a filing decision based on just the information outside of the refusal. So my question to you, Noah, is would you rather work with a client who has a low blow or a refusal?
Well, low blow, for sure. Refusals have enhanced penalties. I think they're a little hard to win on the DOL hearings because there's one less technical argument you can make. Yeah, the machines aren't 100% accurate. There's ranges of them, so as close to below the legal limit as possible means it's more likely that the person was in fact below the legal limit. There's just a lot more opportunities with a low blow versus a refusal.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I'm going to move to an area regarding children, Noah. The two of us, between us, have three toddlers, so the next couple questions are just sort of a gracious nod to... They're not bad, I swear. Would you rather, Noah, be trapped...
Your wife is dangling from a rope, and your toddler is dangling from another.
No. Would you rather be trapped in a room full of petulant children or a room full of petulant prosecutors?
I like kids. Prosecutors are kind of lukewarm on.
And the next one has to do with nursery rhymes, because again, we have three toddlers between the two of us. So, Noah, would you rather represent the big bad wolf or the boy who cried wolf?
I'll take the big bad wolf. He's just acting to his nature and doing a pretty good job of it, I think.
Yeah.
Boy who cried wolf, and no one likes a liar.
Yeah. It's probably going to be annoying, and it's probably going to cry wolf to the Bar Association and file a ethics complaint when your case is over, even if you get their case dismissed or something fantastic like that. Okay, that wraps up the Would You Rather portion of today's podcast and leads us into our final chapter, ladies and gentlemen. I have prepared some very stereotypical interview questions that I'm going to grill Noah on, just in case there's anybody out there thinking about retaining his services. I'm doing you a bit of a favor so you can get a sense of whether or not Mr. Weil is going to be a good defense attorney for your case. And again, these are pulled from the magic of the interwebs, and I compiled some of the most annoying stereotypical interview questions. Okay?
I'm so happy I get to edit this.
Noah, what are your three greatest strengths as a defense attorney?
A ability to communicate with people from a variety of backgrounds. A ability to tactically determine effective strategies for a case to win for my client, and never being wrong.
Wow. Those are some fantastic strengths, and I'm really impressed that you came up with those on the spot. Those are actually three really good ones. How about your three greatest weaknesses? Noah?
That's a hard one. I work too hard. I'm too generous with my time. I care about the company too much.
I'm too much of a perfectionist. Yeah. I just can't let things go when I do everything right to a fault.
I guess organizationally, sometimes I go down the rabbit hole a bit on my cases, and my time, my plans for the day go a little bit awry because I'm exploring these crazy ideas that won't go anywhere, but I like to explore things rather than follow my own structures. I'm not good at marketing. I mean, half the reason this podcast was started was to have another marketing outlet, but I'm not good at going to conference rooms or schmoozy bars events and just letting everybody know I exist. I've never had that gene to just strike up conversations with complete strangers. Third weakness. Like I said, my delivery needs work. I think it's competent. I think it's solid. But I've seen some lawyers, some experienced trial lawyers, just captivate a room with the way they walk and their voice and their posture and everything, and just have this cadence that I'm jealous of, that I wish I could emulate more. So the more, I feel good knowing those are areas to work on.
I want to contradict and tell you that you're wrong about one of those answers.
Well, we know that's not right.
But I want the listeners to know that I happen to be with Noah in King County Superior Court, room 1201, which the attorneys in the know call the zoo, because it's such a crowded courtroom and such a crazy place to be, and it's where
A giraffe in there, too.
Yeah, there's a giraffe, there's a orangutan. It's where the most serious cases in King County are decided, are held, are argued. Noah and I were there together on a case, and another attorney who Noah went to law school with basically ran over to Noah and told him how impressed she was with all of his brand marketing, and that she apparently had just been with another group of their friends, and they all had been talking about Better Know a Lawyer and all of the things that he's done to brand himself and market himself. So I know that we're all our own worst critics, but from somebody who does not even a fraction of the type of branding and marketing that Noah does, I think you're actually really good at that. But it's cute that you were trying to be humble.
Well, you know, it's nice that the people I went to law school with like my work. It's true, I've told other lawyers what I do, but are they paying my bills? I got to get clients here, right? They're the ones I need to let know I exist, the people who need my services.
I'm going to move on to the third annoying interview question. What's the most difficult task you've had to face, and how did you tackle it?
I think, in general, the most difficult tasks in my work are uncooperative clients. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to do your best job for a client, but they themselves make it hard because they miss appointments, or because they're antagonistic against you, or, you know, you're just in a situation, maybe they have mental health problems, or they have addiction problems, something that interferes with your ability to work together with them. The legal questions I could solve all day long. I'll do some research, I'll write something up, that's fine. But the human component, about making sure that you and the client are on the same page and working together, it's a complex thing, and it's very case by case. And I don't have a single answer on how I handle it, but it comes down to basically two questions. It comes down to this: am I able to still do my best job for my client? If I feel like we're butting heads on everything, and it's just I'm tense or unhappy that I have to talk to them, and I don't do my work because I'm just so reluctant to engage with them, then maybe it's time for me to get out of the case so they can get a lawyer who is 100% behind them. And these things happen. It's the real world. Mm-hmm. If there's somebody you can work with, then you shouldn't have to work with them. The being a defendant is too important. These criminal cases are too serious to not have the best representation possible. Right. And that's happened pretty rarely, but it's happened. I remember when I was a public defender one time, I went down to talk to a guy who was having a bad day, and he just said, I'm going to let you know I'm going to rip your head off when we go up to the courtroom because I'm so unhappy with the negotiations you've done and where the case is that I'm going to attack you and I'm going to really try to hurt you. And I said, all right, thanks for letting me know. I'm going to get you another lawyer. And I did. And I was pretty comfortable with that. And, you know, he might have been hyperbole. You know, he was banging on the walls and yelling and all that stuff. But maybe he was going to attack me. And I like my clients. I like the work I do. But no lawyer deserves to be attacked in a courtroom for doing their job. And that's how I handled it. I just decided that I wasn't going to be comfortable. Like, I want to give my full attention to a judge. And if I'm watching my back to see if this guy's making a move, I can't do that. But generally, you just have conversations with them. You tell them what you're doing. My philosophy is always keep them up to date on everything, and so there's no surprises as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And so they'll never say, I didn't know what was going on with my case. They might not like it, and I tell them there's going to be bad news sometimes, potentially, but everything I know, you'll know, and we can work on it together. And that usually solves a lot of problems before they occur.
So Noah, tell me, before I decide to hire you for this company, this imaginary company, are you good at working as part of a team?
I don't know. I work by myself a lot. maybe it's an issue I have. I feel like I'm a big fan of teams. Like, I'm loyal to the team. I think of my client and me as a team, mm-hmm. working together. But at the same time, I can be stubborn and I can feel strongly about a way to proceed that I've had issues with other people before. You've asked about doing trials with other people. I've done it sometimes. It doesn't happen that often.
I think I watched you do it once.
Maybe. I can think of one trial I did where I was working really well with the other attorney and things went as well as could be expected. And, you know, that was fine. It felt like good teamwork. And I would think of another trial I did with another attorney where we were completely at odds about strategy, about distribution of labor. And I remember when it adjourned for the day, I was just so angry that, like, I had to deal with this crazy opposing counsel, this crazy co-counsel, and all this stuff. It was really frustrating. So you were joking before, like, in a joke that we all know is true, that I like being in control of things. So I certainly like being part of a team, and I appreciate the benefits of a team. I just don't want to give up what I think is the best thing to do for the sake of the team, mm-hmm. which doesn't come up too often in our line of work, but once in a while.
Noah, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
Okay.
And president of my local Kiwanis. I expect to be doing what I'm doing now. I know I'll be doing criminal defense. I expect I'll just be taking on more interesting cases. You know, what's fun right now is that there's a lot of laws that are changing. You know, marijuana laws have changed recently. Mm-hmm. Technology laws are constantly changing. I think it's a really fun time to be a lawyer, especially a criminal lawyer. And I hope there's no reason for me to leave this job, but if all goes well, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, it's a fun job. It's a really fun job to have. Noah, tell your loyal listeners about your greatest professional success.
Well, I've certainly gotten plenty of dismissals, and that always feels good. Sometimes after a trial is over, a not guilty verdict feels really sweet. Sometimes a motion to dismiss. Sometimes really effective negotiations. Those all feel good. But I'm very fond of a memory, and I think I've talked about it before on here, where I was really young in my practice, and I was appointed to a case. I was a private attorney, but I was appointed because I was doing some of that work. And the client was actually the engineer case I mentioned. And we had barely any defense. We had the typos on the form. You know, it was pretty weak. And the prosecutor just would not give me a good offer. Like, wanted more time than I thought reasonable based on the circumstances, based on this history. And so I said, we were going to go to trial on this, even though we can't win. And he never understood why I would fight even though I couldn't win. And I said, well, why wouldn't I fight if you're not going to give me anything? And so we fought. We went to trial. We made him subpoena witnesses and had fingerprint people coming and a bunch of cops. It was really...
For a violation of a no-contact order?
Yeah, it was a real show.
Expert witnesses and such for a misdemeanor.
He knew I was taking it seriously, and so he had to step up his game, which made him even madder that he had to go through this process. And we lost really fast. and the judge still sentenced him to less than what their offer was. So it made complete sense to go to trial because we ultimately ended up with a better verdict than if we had just pleaded guilty.
That's a fantastic story because it also shows that you're the type of person who can find success in a loss.
Yeah, there's opportunities. There's always opportunities in this job, which I find really gratifying, just look for little things to work with. But it also made it clear to him, the prosecutor, that I wasn't going to be passive, that I wasn't going to just lie down. And even if I had a loser of a case, I was still going to do my best job for my client. And I wasn't sure that he'd experienced that a lot in his work. I wasn't sure the defenders that he'd worked with, it had come up for him as much. So it felt good to show a good version of the defense attorneys,
yeah,
to let them know that sometimes we're going to make your job really hard and sucks,
right,
sucks for you.
If you're not going to make a reasonable offer, then we'll see you.
Yeah, see you in court.
Jury. I have one final question for you, Mr. Weil.
Okay, one more final question.
Why do you think I should hire you over other candidates for this position?
Well, you know, all the candidates bring something to the table, something unique, and that's fine. I think that you have to understand that this company of yours that you made up is a very intimate company, and that you need to work with someone that you can work with day in and day out on what can be stressful work. But I always keep my co-workers, is that what our saying?
Clients,
the people that I'm working with, I always keep them up to date. I always let them call me or email me anytime, and they have, and that's okay. And that I like to win more than anything else. Like, I care about the process, I care about the system or justice or whatever, I guess, or whatever that, you know, but I really like winning and I really don't like losing. And that motivation of trying to achieve victory helps, it rises the whole water for everybody. Like, everybody benefits when I hate losing and like winning.
Yes.
So let's all win together.
Well, Noah, this is the time, I think, where it's important that I disclose something important to you.
What?
Remember when I mentioned earlier about wishing to be an eagle because I like to sort of watch?
Yeah, voyeurism.
I have been charged with 3 counts of voyeurism.
Mm-hmm.
And based on your answers here to this interview question, I'd like to know, will you be my attorney, Noah Weil?
I would be happy to work with you on this case.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Better Noah Lawyer podcast, if I am willing to hire Noah to face these imaginary criminal charges that I've just outlined, for the love of all things holy, you should entrust your case with Noah. I've known him professionally for years and years and years now. He was a formidable opponent when in my previous life, and he's a fantastic attorney to bounce ideas off of now that we share an office, and everybody should use his services. Everybody should refer their friends to him.
I agree. You know, if I had thought about, like, what crime would Denise be charged with in a hypothetical world, is voyeurism.
Yeah,
my
obviously.
First one. Yeah, that's the first
obviously.
One we go. For sure. You like to peep.
It's just what I do.
It is a peeper.
That's all I have, Noah.
Well, this was fun, Denise. Thank you for taking over the podcast.
Well, thank you for finally relinquishing control. I've been trying to do this, ladies and gentlemen, for only about 4 weeks, and it took a lot of poking and prodding for Noah to agree to do a podcast where he didn't know what the content would be, and he didn't have an opportunity to look at the questions ahead of time. So I also appreciate his flexibility here. It's been fun.
In my defense, you're just not that important. So just didn't think to rate that high anyway. But yeah, no, this is good. This is good. You earned some more stature.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you have a great rest of your day, and we hope to catch you on the next podcast.
This is Noah Weil with Denise Gagne, signing off.